You're listening to the 13th episode of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, the Gearheart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time on the Gearheart, Jonathan learns that his appointment with the Seeress is sooner than he thought, and he must now meet his destiny unprepared. The Hangman catches Isabel unaware and leaves her broken on the roof of the main house. With her friends nowhere near, will Isabel survive? Find out on the Gearheart. Jonathan was led through chamber after chamber toward the home of the Seeress. Each room had increasingly more academics and armed guards, as well as a plethora of devices that Jonathan could not even begin to fathom. These were glass and copper things, bristling with electricity and steam, fashioned into conductors and dynamos and other oddities. Jonathan left Keegan behind to join the others in the cafeteria, but Cog insisted that she follow. As it so happened, the Seeress's invitation was extended to any woman who refused to leave his side. Cog's eyes darted about each room in turn, placing where the men with guns stood, engaging the relative estimated abilities of each potential magus. As they descended stairwell after stairwell, Cog's expression became sterner. She was obviously concerned about the whole affair, and her fingers were always poised in a very particular fashion. To some, it might seem like a nervous tic, but Jonathan knew exactly what it was. She held in her hand the beginnings of a glyph to call her sword to her side. Before long, they entered a section of the palace that was suspiciously devoid of armed guards, or anyone else. The structure narrowed into a hallway 10 feet wide and 15 feet tall, with no lights affixed to it. The phosphorescent stone walls and floors were a perfect shade of cerulean, with golden wires laid into them in precise, angular patterns. It was quite beautiful, almost tribal, but never pictographic. The walls bore a few signs of age as well, and Jonathan wondered just how old they were. Cog looked even more languid than usual in their present surroundings. The pale blue light from the walls bit into the remaining color of her skin and washed away any warmth. Her chrysanthemum irises flashed gray in the ambiance of their surroundings. The guards stood at the entryway on the other side of the door from Cog and Jonathan. One of the guards spoke before assuming a strict attention posture.
"You'll find the Seeress ahead.
If you don't mind my asking, what are those wires?"
Jonathan asked. Cog's expression echoed his question.
"You'll find the Seeress ahead,"
the guard repeated. Jonathan guessed that the guard didn't know either. The two of them began their journey into the depths, and Cog seemed more nervous than ever. She put a heavy hand on Jonathan's shoulder and stopped him.
"We shouldn't continue, Jonathan. I can't possibly protect you here,"
she stated coldly.
"What do you mean? I don't see anyone."
"That's the point. There are no people here, and the walls obviously conduct arcane energies,"
she elaborated, her eyes darting back and forth.
"There are no people here to get caught up in it if there are destructive spells cast."
"I don't want to turn back, Cog," said Jonathan.
"I can't protect you, though."
Jonathan bit his lip.
"They're not going to kidnap me or anything.
I want to make sure that you have a choice in these matters."
And I appreciate that, but I'm already here, I'm already willing to stay, and I've already walked into a hallway that could probably incinerate me, if that's what they were planning. So, I'm not really worried.
I understand,
Cog replied, lowering her eyes. Jonathan smiled warmly and placed a hand on her shoulder.
I have faith that you could get me out of here if I changed my mind. You could, go take some hostages, or something back at the front if you wanted.
I don't think that would be necessary,
Cog replied. She returned his smile, and they continued forward. The phosphorescent blue granite eventually gave way to a vast, mossy carpet, intertwined with gnarled, ancient roots. The moss was soft and easy to walk upon, not slick at all like Jonathan had expected. Bright sunlight filtered into the hallway from a room beyond, which unnerved the two explorers. The air was warm and inviting, like a summer's day, which hardly matched the weather outside. By Jonathan's estimate, the pair should have been pretty far underground, and the weather was anything but sunny when they went into that building. A tiny silhouette, about the size of a pack of cards, fluttered in the sunlight beyond. As Jonathan and Cog approached, they could see that it was a large emerald butterfly, its wings beating slowly in the air as it meandered toward them. It alighted on Cog's shoulder for a brief moment, and any expression of caution fleetingly passed from her eyes. The creature was beautiful, with viridescent wings adorned with an incredible pattern of two large, black eyes upon its back. The butterfly flattened its back, and the wings seemed to stare at Jonathan. He quickly became aware of something strange about the creature. He tried to convince himself that it was an illusion, but the eyes seemed to follow him as he stepped back and forth around Cog. He shooed the creature away, and Cog regained her composure.
Those aren't butterflies.
Cog and Jonathan stepped into the open room, and their eyes were flooded with sunlight. As they adjusted, the pair found themselves in the center of a circle of seven primeval oak trees at the top of a sun-drenched, grassy hill, overlooking an incredible pastoral valley. Long, cirrus clouds stretched across the high, clear sky, and overhead thousands of the verdant butterflies wheeled about. Jonathan looked back at the way they had come to see that it was gone, vanished completely into the body of one of the oaks. His pulse quickened.
It's an illusion,
came a crackling, withered voice from below. Looking down, Jonathan and Cog saw that they were standing atop a crumbling stone slab, encrusted with roots and moss. The clumps of roots were dense, and travel over them was rough enough that it was hard to find footing. Here and there, the gold wires from the previous hallway were exposed and visible, forming pieces of a series of concentric circles focused around the center of the slab. The root systems all stretched toward the center of the rock, where they formed a bundle and dug into the shriveled flesh of a human woman who laid bound against the surface of the slab. Jonathan was surprised that neither of them had accidentally stepped on the pitiful creature. She was clothed in rags, and her hair was covered in dirt and dust. Her body was half overtaken with roots and moss, forming a strange, impromptu camouflage against the more impressive elements nearby. Her irises were a necrotic gray, and everywhere a root pierced her body was surrounded with a wicked bruise and dried blood. She barely looked alive. Indeed, Jonathan would have believed her dead had she not just spoken to him. Even given her speech, he still wasn't sure if she was alive. Jonathan certainly didn't see her breathing. She merely laid there, wrinkled mouth agape, staring at the heavens. She took a long, strained breath.
I am the Cirrus,
she managed to say during her exhalation. The Cirrus's eyes narrowed and rolled back in her head, and she ejected a long, retching laugh. It creaked horribly as it shot around the illusory valley, sinking into Jonathan's spine. She strained against the branches as she cackled, reopening some of the wounds in her skin. Jonathan looked at Cog with a horrified expression, but her confused glance informed him that there was nothing humorous.
I changed my mind,
Jonathan spoke reflexively. Only then did he realize that his statement was what was so funny to the Cirrus. A feeling of nakedness washed over him.
I am so honored,
the Cirrus labored,
to be graced by the presence of both the Commoner King and the Lady Antonello at the same time.
Half of her face smiled and blinked, and it became apparent to Jonathan that the rest of her was completely paralyzed.
I don't want to sound disrespectful, Jonathan began.
I know you don't like the name, but it is what you are. even if your name is also Jonathan Andrews.
The seeress interrupted.
I find one more descriptive than the other, Your Highness.
It's more that I think that it's not a good idea to flatter that side of me.
Jonathan spoke in low tones with his eyes averted.
Or he might make an appearance.
I'm not afraid of Auden Slade, dear boy.
The seeress rasped.
He may be a cold-hearted killer, but he wouldn't harm those of use to him.
Jonathan stood dumbfounded. He didn't really know what to say or ask, since he was the one who was summoned to the place of the seeress. He felt that he couldn't possibly know anything about her, but she seemed to know everything about him. Overhead, the butterflies seemed to pulse outward in a wave of activity. Cog remained silent, but she didn't take her hand out of formation.
You are no doubt wondering why I brought you here, King, but you no doubt already think you know.
The seeress grated in a hideous cough. Again came the guttering laugh, and she showed her devastated teeth, cracked and yellowed with age.
I thought you were going to tell me I was going to be like you, but it won't happen.
Jonathan replied, wondering if he had made her laugh in advance.
Even if you did not wield considerable power,
the seeress croaked,
you could never be like me.
Jonathan felt anger flare in his heart. He did not much appreciate being told what he could and could not do. Something deep inside him fought to rise to the surface, but Jonathan managed to swallow his feelings. His skin grew clammy, and his knees felt weak. Cog stepped forward and caught Jonathan's arm, and his gaze met hers. He was terrified. Jonathan took a clumsy step back.
Please watch your words, Miss, Cirrus. I'm not sure what it is about this place, but...
The world here is thin, boy,
came the voice of the Cirrus.
It makes for better viewing of things in the distance. It can also get a little charged.
Yes, well, you are going to tell me why I can't be an oracle,
said Jonathan. He didn't understand why he didn't feel relieved. The seeress's brows furrowed, and she met his gaze for the first time. Her dead eyes were quite sympathetic, and she gave him a little smile with one half of her face.
My visions are the product of something amazing. All of the seekers are like children to me. Those that I would give all of myself to protect. Because of this need, I am blessed with the ability to make the sacrifice of my body and see far into the future.
When she said that, she seemed quite unexpectedly beautiful to Jonathan. Every root that invaded her, every wound that menaced her skin, was obviously something that she treasured, and she made no effort to avoid them. He could see in her eyes the look of a mother. For the first time, he wanted to kneel to get closer and hear what she was saying.
So, I have that power within me?
Jonathan asked.
You are useless to the Seekers. Your visions are spawned by hatred, boy. The hatred of the thing that lives inside you,
said the Seeress, her expression thick with admonishment.
Every moment, he seeks to destroy his enemies and any who would threaten him. From a high vantage point within you, he can read the winds the way I read the changing of my dear butterflies.
Jonathan stood and took a bewildered step back. The shadows around his heart began to rage like bubbling tar, and he swiftly felt quite powerless.
I think I understand,
he mumbled, trying to get her to stop speaking. Cog's shoulder blocked his view as she stepped between Jonathan and the seeress. Jonathan wanted to believe that she was going to comfort him, but she affixed him with a narrow, cold gaze.
Jonathan, your eyes are turning. You need to control yourself.
Cog,
he pleaded. Cog turned to the seeress and looked her in the eye.
I would advise that you phrase your next sentences carefully.
Your visions will only ever concern yourself, useless boy.
The seeress sputtered, feebly raising one quivering hand to point at Jonathan with an implicating finger.
They will only tell you who to kill and how to survive until your scum of a master can build a second empire upon our blighted planet.
Cog's fingers moved quickly like the flicker of a film reel, performing their most practiced motion. The air behind her hummed with energy, and she knew exactly what was happening. She only prayed that she would stop him in time. In an instant that seemed to take forever, trails of light slithered toward her hand and transformed into a gladius that looked to be wrought from black iron. It had a quality like shattered onyx and weighed as much as a large sack of flour. Her hand wrapped around its familiar weathered grip, and she spun to meet the blade that was no doubt headed straight for her. Jonathan wasn't standing before her anymore, but a green-eyed warrior with flowing black hair and a hawkish smile. Gleaming plated armor covered every part of his body, and a sword as long as a man was coming to bear on the crown of Kong's head. Barring a successful parry, the strike would destroy the Cirrus as well. Cog brought the cut to a halt, but nearly buckled under the force. Any other person with any other weapon would have been smashed instantaneously. Cog was hardly normal, but the blow wobbled her legs and caused tremendous strain in her shoulders. The figure across from her clicked his tongue and delivered a devastating spinning kick to her midsection. She sailed backwards over the Cirrus into the opposing wall. The spell that created the illusion threw off a shower of sparks as her body smashed into it, but everything held. Cog silently cursed her father for giving her such realistic feelings of pain as she planted her feet and launched back across the room in a single bound. Her blade hissed and arced along his as she pushed his greatsword to one side, looking for a clean shot. If she could just hurt him badly enough, perhaps Jonathan would come back. She was too close to him for him to make an effective attack with his weapon, and now merely needed to carefully choose her target. Without warning, he brought the pommel of his weapon across her face in a meteoric blow, hurling her into the floor by her head. Her world seemed to explode around her as she shattered the roots below her body. Cog lashed out against the ground, sending her spinning backwards into the air, and engaged her arcane circuit. Tiny arcs erupted from the soles of her leather boots, drawing her safely to the ground and giving her an upright balance. She straddled the bundle of roots in the center of the room, careful not to step on the fragile Cirrus, who would be unable to move away. Without even a moment's pause, Cog hurled her blade directly at the warrior's face in an easily predicted maneuver. He flawlessly deflected Cog's blade upward as she dove forward into a roll. While his guard was at his head, she sprung from her ball and kicked straight out with a hit that could have split a boulder, sending the warrior into the illusory oak behind him. Twinkling orbs erupted from the structure all around the pair of fighters as she seized the warrior's stunned body and hurled him into the opposing wall where she had just been. She called her blade, and it returned to her hand as quickly as it had left. Not missing a beat, the warrior kicked to his feet and readied his guard.
"I should not have underestimated you,"
he huffed. Even his accent and vocal tones were nothing like Jonathan's.
"It would be wise to bring back Jonathan before you get hurt,"
Cog said through clenched teeth. Every muscle in her body was like a coiled spring.
"The likes of you aren't welcome here, Slade."
"Oh, please," he laughed. "I killed the rest of the Antonellos. You think I can destroy you just as easily?"
The Cirrus's voice seemed to creak out of the floor.
"There is one Antonello you haven't heard from yet, Commoner King."
Cog fumbled with her words and suddenly felt unable to breathe.
"What?"
Across from her, the warrior had a similar reaction, though he quickly regained his composure.
"Maybe I'll have to ask you about it in the afterlife,"
he mused. With that, he raised his blade and Cog realized that she'd made a critical error in judgment. There was nothing between the warrior and the Cirrus, and Cog had placed the pieces that way in her haste. She knew that a killing stroke from the warrior to the Cirrus would leave him undefended, but she hadn't counted on him not caring. The great sword rose in a wide arc, rending some of the butterflies unlucky enough to be in its path. She had to try to stop him before he destroyed the last potential source of information on her family. Cog planted her feet upon the roots and sprung forward, hoping to tackle him into the barrier behind him. To her horror, he was never committed to the strike against the Cirrus and quickly sidestepped Cog's clumsy attack. Seizing her by the base of her neck, he threw Cog headlong into the panel behind her, making maximum use of her momentum. As she struck the barrier, the familiar sparks and flares issued forth, filling her vision and rendering her blind. She had to find him. She had to locate the next blow before it was too late. Kog heard a light jangle as an armored hand wrapped around the medallion on her neck and jerked it free. Then everything went black. Auden Slade looked down at the medallion in his hand and grinned. Cog's body collapsed lifelessly to the ground, a completely blank look adorning her face.
"I always wondered if that would work,"
he said.
"Are you finished yet, Your Highness?"
the Cirrus rasped.
"Quite. Are you prepared to help me, Cirrus?"
Auden asked as he strode to stand over her, sword in one hand, medallion in the other.
"Why would I do that?"
"Because I know that you can see that I won't be giving up control of this body anytime soon. Because you know that you can be a valuable addition to my empire,"
Auden replied. The Cirrus shook her head as best as she could.
"I don't believe that will happen, Your Highness."
"Why don't I tear you out of these roots, and I'll ask what's left of you for your help later, then?"
"You don't want to do that,"
she labored.
"You want to kill the remaining Antonellos, and I know the final identity."
"But you're not going to tell me?"
"No,"
the Cirrus sighed. Auden brought the point of his massive sword to bear on the Cirrus's forehead and held it steady with one hand.
"Then I suppose I'll have to see if any secrets come spilling out with your brains."
"Before you do that, could you tell that dear boy, Jonathan, that Isabel is dying as we speak?"
Auden tried to kill her before she could finish her sentence, but he wasn't fast enough. Before Auden could even draw another breath, Auden's irises shifted back to hazel, and his hair pulled back into his head, turning sandy brown. He fell to his knees, screaming curses, but before long it was merely Jonathan's voice, not Auden's. The curses became terrified cries as Jonathan looked around to see Cog lying in a crumpled heap and her medallion in his hands.
"No!"
he cried over and over again, stumbling over to Cog's empty form and cradling it in his arms. She seemed even heavier than usual as she rested limply upon him.
"Jonathan,"
the Cirrus breathed.
"Come to me and look me in the eye."
"No,"
he sobbed.
"I can't. I just..."
he gasped.
"I just don't want to leave her."
"She isn't dead, my dear."
"I know that,"
he gushed.
"I just... I hurt her. I knew this would happen."
Jonathan stroked her hair, and he felt hot tears streaming from his eyes.
"I hurt everyone,"
he mumbled.
"I just wanted to protect someone."
"It's because you're always running away. Now come here,"
she admonished, though her voice was soft. Jonathan managed to stand and walked back to the Cirrus. It hurt to look her in the eye, but what he found was a kind smile.
"You hurt people because you are weak in your soul, Jonathan. All you do is run away."
He closed his eyes and a tear fell upon the roots next to the Cirrus.
"I know that."
"And yet, you even run from that knowledge."
"You know that I need to be locked away."
"When I first learned of you, I considered telling them to kill you, Jonathan. It would have been so easy."
"You should have."
"Perhaps,"
she continued.
"But I knew that you would one day join the Seekers. It has only been 2 years, but I always knew that I would come to love you just like all of my other children. Just like Isabel."
"Where is she?"
Jonathan pleaded, falling to his knees and grasping the Cirrus's withered hands.
"She wasn't really dying, right?"
"I'm afraid she is. Your enemy has afflicted her with something terrible in the hopes of drawing you out."
Jonathan's heart plummeted through the floor and he gnashed his teeth.
"But there's something I can do, right?"
"I have arranged for them to find her,"
said the Cirrus.
By the time that you leave here, you will need to go to the infirmary where Darren is looking after her. The poor man has received quite a shock, I'm afraid. Receiving two messages from me in 1 week is a bit much.
She isn't gonna die, right?
That depends on you, Jonathan. Perhaps if you fail, we will all die. It is imperative, though, that you see how things are and accept your burdens.
I understand.
The Cirrus met Jonathan's gaze once more.
I also want you to tell something to Lady Antonello.
Jonathan looked down at the red stone dangling from the leather choker in his hand.
What is it?
Tell her she'll be seeing Wylan soon.
Is he another member of her family?
Oh dear. I didn't realize you didn't know.
The Cirrus replied, frowning.
That's a matter better addressed by Lady Antonella.
Jonathan stood to leave, but then realized he had no way of transporting Cog. He looked to the Cirrus near panic.
Can you call your guards to help me carry her?
I've arranged for something better, my dear.
What did you do?
Came an enraged shout from beyond the illusory oak. Jonathan turned to see the young, furious face of Augustus right before being clocked straight in the nose. What will Jonathan do now that he knows of Isabel's condition? Will she be all right? The young initiate understands his demons now, but can he keep the reins on Auden Slade? Find out on The Gearheart. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by Green Memories, for when your loved ones are gone, but the planet is still here. Tired of walking through a cemetery and seeing that stone litter everywhere? Just because our dearly departed were irresponsible in life doesn't mean they should be irresponsible in death. Green Memories eco-friendly biodegradable memorials made from equal parts cornstarch, recycled paper, and kudzu seeds. That way, your dearly departed can provide valuable greenery while lovingly doubling as compost. Green Memories, ask about our mulching service. And by a pony. Would you like a pony, little girl? You can ride around on it in your sundress and pretty, pretty hair. Every pretty princess rides a pony. Don't you want one, too? So remember, little girl, ponies are pretty, and so are you.